Hi everyone, today is Sunday, July 1st, 2012, and it is 5:08 Eastern Time and 2:08 Pacific Time, and we have Mick Quinn from the Integral Heart Foundation speaking to us about Buddhist compassion, conscious service. And also I just found out that he's written a book in 2009, which was published, called The Uncommon Path. So maybe we can ask him questions about what that process was like. And I'll just turn it over to Mick. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Veronica. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for all your work in getting this set up. And I'm looking forward to a good call today. So as Veronica, we were chatting beforehand, I'm actually calling live from Guatemala. It's the rainy season here, so it's I'm looking out of the picture window at a cloudy day, and I can just see the silhouette of a 5,000 foot extinct volcano in front of me. And it rains here from 1 o'clock to about 5 every day. So as you can imagine, it's quite a green country, and sometimes we get too much rain and we have some landslides, but we can talk about those later. I'm originally Irish, as you will probably notice from the accent. I was born there and lived there till I was 23. And in 1986, I moved to the States in search of the American dream and a better life. And spent almost 7 years living in the Boston area, where I was actually without papers. We were kind of keeping one eye over our shoulder for immigration and police and the usual stuff in those days. And I got my green card in 1993, so this was 2 years after I met Rama. I won a green card in a lottery, which was quite common in those days. And then on the advice of my mentor, Will Arnst, at the time, he was in technology, and he said to me, he said, "Now you have your papers," he said, "move to New York City and go back to college and start studying computers." And that's exactly what I did. I spent some time studying at Columbia. And that's when I met Morty and Richard Harmon, and they were starting up a little startup that Rama was financing called the Team Alliance, or Team Source originally, and then we changed the name to Team Alliance. And that was May of 1993, down at the World Trade Centers, Tower 1, 79th floor. And it's basically where I worked for 7 years, from 1994 right up until the fateful day of 9/11 in 2001. And we did TA, and then TA was sold to Hawk Kenyon, and I started a company of my own doing pretty much the same thing, which was technical recruiting and software development, which I ran for 2 years with two partners who were not in the group at the time. And I sold my shares to them, I think about 3 months before .com crashed. So I kind of got out right before the hammer hit there in that fateful day in April of 2000. And after that, I did coaching because I was helping other people to build their own businesses or start their own businesses or sell them. I did that for about 2 years and right up until 9/11. Now, at this time, I had started studying with, as I said, with Rama for about 6 years. And we did a lot of meditation, as we all remember. And after his exit, it was quite a rough time for about two and a half years. And then I found a teacher called Andrew Cohen, who's based in Lenox, Massachusetts, and teaches evolutionary enlightenment. And I studied with him from probably around 2000, 2001, up until about 2006. And I'm still in touch with him and his group. They've actually been very supportive of our work down here in Guatemala. And it was right after 9/11 when I decided that I think that phase of my life was ending, which was the phase of initial discovery and those years of spiritual practice. And having done some work with Andrew, I decided to basically end my time in the United States. It was 17 years, and I decided a change was coming. So I basically wrapped up and sold everything and moved to northern Portugal. I bought a house in rural end of northern Portugal, right by Spain, with the intention of deepening practice and writing a book. And this is where the Uncommon Path actually began. That was in 2003 in Portugal. And it's also where I met my future wife, Deborah, who's actually right now still watching the end of the Spanish-Italian soccer game. And we lived in northern Portugal for about 4 years and published a version of the book in Spanish, which was published in Spain. And that led to us moving to Barcelona for marketing reasons. And then Deborah basically fell in love with Zen through the work of Ken Wilber and an individual called Genpo Roshi. And when the Uncommon Path was published in 2009, the publisher suggested that we move back to the States to work on the marketing from there. So it was a natural move to a place called Salt Lake City, of all places, a beautiful town, because that's where Roshi's Sangha was based at the time. And we participated quite a bit in the Big Mind work with Roshi, and also Deborah was quite involved in Zen, and she's received Jukai and Shoke Tokudu, and she's a former monk in his lineage. And it was, I think, at the end of 2009 when the book was finally released and on the market, we said, let's take a vacation, and we wanted to reconnect with some Spanish culture. And rather than going back to Spain, we said, let's go south of the border and see what we can find. And we ended up coming here to Guatemala. I was a little bit nervous. I mean, when somebody first suggested to me Guatemala, the first thing I thought about was gangs, drugs, and poverty. And the woman, the friend who recommended that we come here said, well, yes, she said, but Antigua is a city, well, a large town in Guatemala, and the name for it is the Jewel of Guatemala. It's a Spanish colonial city from the 1400s. It's quite a power spot, and not at all like what one would expect to see in Guatemala. So we came here on vacation, and obviously we fell in love with the place. And because I think maybe 3 months after our vacation, we went back to Salt Lake, and we decided let's just move, and we did. We packed our container, and we took our golden retriever from Salt Lake, and we basically drove from Salt Lake City to Guatemala. We took 3.5 weeks, drove down to Mexico, an absolutely beautiful country, had no trouble whatsoever, and crossed the border and into Guatemala. Now, at the time, we were supporting ourselves from coaching that was based on the book, and we decided to do some volunteering. So we picked up the local magazine here in town, and we got down as far as the C's in the alphabetical list of all the organizations, and that's as far as we got until we were completely overwhelmed with the need down here for people to help. And it was about 6 months after that that we decided that we could actually make use of the studies that we've jointly had in meditation, in psychological development, in emotional training, to help mostly teenagers down here. And that was the birth of the Integral Heart Foundation. We didn't actually have that intention when we first moved here. So that was 2010. We've been growing steadily ever since. And what I'll do in a few minutes, I'm going to take you through some photographs, which are the best of 2011. But basically, as of today, we have 4 employees and 3 volunteers on the ground down here. We're teaching what we call a critical thinking class, and I'll go into that more through the photo series. But it's basically a philosophy-based class to 2 different groups of teenagers. There's 84 teenagers in total. We have a sponsorship program where we sponsor younger kids, and we also sponsor these teenagers when they leave high school so they can continue to study. And we have a solar program where we provide these small portable solar units to families who don't have electricity, or families who do have electricity but are kind of borrowing it from the neighbor. It's quite common down here to see, extension cables going from one tin shack to the next, and everyone's kind of living off the one person who's got power in the neighborhood. And we also have a kindergarten program. We're actually opening our second location tomorrow. Actually, is the first day. We spent the last month getting it ready. And that is providing a safe haven for kids between the ages of 0 and 6, because down here at that age, there's no public school system available. And if your parents are working, it means you're left at home to fend for yourself. And home is often, a pretty horrendous place to be left. And you'll often find, a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old who's in the care of a 7-year-old, and he's got to try and feed them and try and keep them clean for the whole day for a whole, years on end. So these kindergartens provide a safe haven for these kids. So before I get into the pictures, or the photos from last year, do you have any questions, Veronica, or anybody else?
Well, I'm just curious because I'm looking at the website, which I want to tell everybody is www.integral, I-N-T-E-G-R-A-L, heartfoundation.org. And it's fascinating to look at your solar Guatemala efforts. And so I'd love to hear about that a little bit later. And also, thank you so much for talking about your book and your history. So, does anybody on the in the audience at the moment have any questions? I will say that to unmute your line, you hit *6, and then I just ask that you remute your line at the end of your question. And you can also type into the chat box. Now, I will say that, excuse me, if you do have a question later on, Mick will be pausing before after each major section, and so. If you do have a question, if you can either type it into the chat box or ask it during that period, that would be great. So, Mick, will you have time to talk about the solar power effort and how people can get light there?
Sure, and maybe what I'll do, Veronica, as we go through the photos, I have these arranged by program. So there's quite a few photographs in here of the solar in action. So we can cover that when we get to that section.
Okay. Okay, great. And then I'm curious because I want to buy this for my house.
Well, these are not around the topic. They're actually designed by a Guatemalan astrophysicist who graduated MIT and who ran a hedge fund in Connecticut up until 2008. And when the market started to get bad, he decided to move back down here. And his passion is sustainability. And he basically designed these units because you can imagine the conditions under which they have to operate are pretty extreme down here. And he had them manufactured, and now they import them to the country, and they're working throughout the country. They've arranged microcredit programs at one of the smaller banks that have locations throughout Guatemala. And I found them through a friend of mine in Vietnam who knew I was also interested in sustainable energy sources, and he sent me a link to the Quetzal and a video. And I just went online, found the website, called Cano, and we've been the best of friends since 2010. So they're quite an amazing little unit, and it's actually blossomed since. There are now 4 or 5 different companies here in Guatemala providing various forms of solar energy.
Okay, great. Well, if you could send me the link, I'll share it with everybody at the after the end of the call.
Okay, then we'll do that.
Thank you so much.
So what we'll do now is let me just preface this by saying that for me, compassion is wanting to relieve suffering. Now, compassion towards self or compassion towards others. And compassion emerges from wisdom. And wisdom is, for me, two things. It's the ability to understand emptiness, the ability to embrace emptiness, the ability to be one with emptiness. But it's also a matter of perspectives. It's a matter of being able to take another person's perspective. And it's a matter of understanding how we're naturally groomed to take our own perspective initially, meaning an egocentric perspective on the world. And as we grow up, we also become aware that we're part of a larger group, a town, a city, a country, a nation state, and that we will sometimes and naturally take that perspective, ethnocentric perspective. And as we continue to deepen in our pursuit of wisdom, we can graduate to a world-centric perspective where we can include the entire world in our work, or at least a perspective of in our work. And even beyond that, as wisdom deepens, we can evolve to what's called a cosmocentric perspective, where we actually begin to see ourselves and our work in the world as being the process of life itself, that evolution, that consciousness is evolving, and that we can and are a driving force in that development. So beginning back in, excuse me, in 1993, when I first met Dr. Lenz, I was driven to him out of suffering. And I remember finding the practice of meditation to be quite beautiful and quite a relief from suffering. So, you asked me earlier the influence, and I believe the influence to today's call began back in, I would say, 1991, when I first saw the poster Canyons of Light that somebody had hung up in a laundromat that was downstairs in my building in Boston at the time. So there's definitely a direct thread of light that weaves its way back all those years. So over the years of working in New York and, let's say, developing the egocentric stance to its ultimate, and then having that dissipate into a higher level, and writing the book and producing the book, there seems to be this common thread of compassion and a willingness and a desire to alleviate unnecessary suffering. And that's entirely at the root of the Utica Heart Foundation. And I'll take you through some pictures now of how that's manifesting here on the ground. And this is actually a slideshow that I use when I do fundraising trips. I go to the States about once or twice a year to connect with donors and various groups up there. So the first picture here is of our, this is our logo, and this is the Japanese kanji for chaos. And chaos is where great dreams begin. And we chose this kanji because, as you can imagine, working in any third world country, it's quite chaotic. And if you notice in the for those of you who are watching it online, this top line here represents the earth, and this little piece that's sticking through the earth represents a new bud, like a flower or a tree or something that just broke itself through the earth. So at this time here, it's quite chaotic, and it can die quite easily. It can get stomped upon. So this time here is quite chaotic. What most people don't see, and this is the root of the Utica Heart Foundation, is that the root system is already very well developed and well structured and really quite strong. So this is our logo for the Integral Heart Foundation. And here's our two employees and my wife Deborah here in the yellow. This photograph was taken in a village called Mano de Leon, which means hand of the lion, which is a Guatemalan flower. And it's about a village of 90 people, or sorry, 90 people, about 18 families. They're quite isolated, even though from where I'm sitting it's only 5 miles, but it takes about 35 minutes to get there because you have to climb. It's quite a beautiful steep road up, but you can actually drive down into this place. And we've been working with this village since 2010, providing clothing and very basic needs, and also solar. We have 11 solar units in this village because they have no electricity, they have no water, they have a well. But a well is up here in this mountain behind. We're actually working on a project to try and get piping and faucets so we can get the water down to the houses. So this is Liz from Canada, and that's Deborah, and this is Reinhardt. He's German Guatemalan. They work with us full time. So the first program is what we call integral theory or critical thinking or philosophy for teenagers. What we're doing here is we are teaching kids not what to think, but we're teaching kids how to think. We're teaching them about undiscovered potentials. And this goes back to maybe my first time when I met Rama in Boston, and the first time you experience a very high state of consciousness. You actually become aware that this is something that's not coming from him, but it's actually inherent in all of us. So we're teaching the kids somewhat similar, that these potentials for greatness are within. And we teach, as I said, there are 84 teenagers in this program at two different school locations. We don't own these buildings. What we do is we just present our ideas to the directors and for the most part, they're more than happy to allow us access to their teenagers. And again, as you can see here, it's very interactive. We really like to engage the kids. And the next photograph is again here. So now we're back to meditation. We do a lot of meditation work with the kids, and this is based on a lot of what I studied with Rama and also with Andrew Cohen and also Deborah's work with Zen. I would call it bare attention meditation, where the idea is to have no relationship to any object in awareness. The simple instructions are, as you see here, with the kids sitting still, eyes closed and back straight, and then don't move, and allow everything to be as it is, and have no relationship to the content of consciousness, regardless of what that content happens to be. We have a few of the students who told us that they have taken up practice on their own, which is really kind of encouraging. And all of these kids live in 1 and 2 room tin shacks, often with dirt floors, often with 3 generations, and often in the most abusive situations that anybody can imagine. So it looks pretty here, but it's not that pretty. This is a close-up of the board. Of course, whoever understands Spanish, because Deb and I teach together. And what we're teaching them, again, you can see here is one of the beautiful things about integral theory is teaching perspectives. And integral theory is based on the idea that there are essentially 4 major perspectives that we can have on the human experience, and that any situation can be viewed from 4 different perspectives. So the I perspective, which is my personal perspective. There's the we perspective, which is what 2 of us or more can understand reality as being. And there's a third perspective called it, which is the objective or scientific perspective. And then there's an its perspective, which includes the social structures and laws, etc., that are present and available to us. So we teach the kids this, and they quite enjoy it. There's a group shot of us with the kids from San Mateo. Part of this program is bringing in experts from publishing the book. We really allowed us access to some beautiful minds around the world. And the individual on the screen here, this is Jeff Carrera, who's the director of education programs for Andrew Cohen's organization, which is an international organization, been around for almost 30 years. And he came in by video Skype and gave a talk to the combined classes on the Big Bang and how something could come from nothing. And the kids were quite intrigued and also quite engaging. He was actually very surprised that they had so many questions. And again, this location was this is a private think tank that's located in Antigua, where we live, and it was offered to us by a friend of our organization. He's had Don Beck here, who's the founder, well, not the founder, but let's say the grandfather of spiral dynamics, and a lot of government people come here to ponder issues. So this is quite a gift to find this location. And the thing that the kids were most interested in this place, besides the beautiful swimming pools and the furnishings, were the bathrooms. Like, all the kids disappeared on the break, and they were all in the bathrooms with their cell phones, taking pictures of each other in the bathrooms, because they had things that we take for granted, like running water and towels and marble on the floor and nice mirrors. We're like, where are the kids gone? The next picture is just another angle here on this location. This is another expert. This is Mugaku Sensei, also known as Michael Zimmerman, who's the former Chief Justice of the state of Utah. Deborah and I have a good relationship with he and his wife, Diane Hamilton, who's also a great teacher. And he came in to give a talk on Zen and what is Zen. And one of the kids actually asked him at the end of the class, what was the relationship between Zen and Taoism? So for a third world country, these kids are quite aware. They're living in the age of cell phones and Facebook, so they know what's going on in the world. And Michael did an hour here with us at one of the schools. This is Andre Norman. He is former prisoner, actually. He was in Walpole in Massachusetts for 14 years. He was a gang leader in Boston, so they got him and locked him up, and he became the gang leader in the prison. He said it's the only way he survived. He's now a motivational speaker and talks with people like Richard Branson and Ted Kennedy and the like. And he came down here for a week. We gave talks to 1,200 kids in 5 days on the value of education. And he did it on his dime. This was a free gift to our organization. And he, as you can imagine, he's quite enlightened in his own way. He's a beautiful person. And his heart really went out to these kids. So this is one image of him talking through Deborah, my wife, as an interpreter. This is Kelly Fogarty, who's a Zen monk in Salt Lake City. And she came, actually, this is the Shield Center in Hokotenango, one of the places where we teach. And again, we combine the three classes here. And she gave a talk on the Four Noble Truths. This is Ava Malia, who's a psychologist from Providence, Rhode Island. And this is the Mother's Club, a part of the work at this school. We actually don't do this kind of work. What they do with the moms is to educate the moms. And she gave a talk on basically on abuse and of children and also spousal abuse and how to deal with that. And what she said at the end of this talk was quite interesting. She said, you know, usually I give these talks in the States. And she said afterwards, I have a list of 800 numbers to give out to people. I have places people can go for help. But she said down here, there was nothing. All I said was, you know, thank you for your attention, because there are really no follow-up services whatsoever in this area yet. These are some of our sponsor kids, Esley and Anderson, Sarita and Kathy. This is at a hotel that belongs to one of our board members down here. She's an American who owns a hotel. And they were doing a piano duet with a lady called Jessica Romisher, who teaches evolutionary enlightenment through piano duets. It's quite a beautiful way that she's come up to teach, to allow people to experience mysticism through the piano. And these kids were playing along. She was Skyping in, and again, another aspect of our integral philosophy education program. So I'm going to stop there, Veronica, if there's any questions, because now we're getting into the second program here, the kindergarten.
Okay, I was engrossed for, bear with me just a moment while I look at our chat box and see if there are any questions. So, what are the age ranges of the kids that are there?
The age ranges in the integral philosophy program are from 13 to about 20. So it's basically three different grades. The grades are slightly different to what they are in the States, but that's about the age range, but 12 to 20. But I'd say the average is in around 14 to 16. Most of the kids would be in that age group.
What do they do when they're younger?
Well, they have lower grades. We pick them up at what's called, well, by American standards, it would be middle school for the 3 years of middle school. But before that, they have junior, I guess it's called junior high in the States. So they would be 6 years before that.
And then do they stop? Are there other options for them if they didn't go to your school?
The public system down here is interesting because of a lack of infrastructure. What happens is the younger kids go to school from, I think it's from 8 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then the older kids, the teenagers, come in at 2, and they go to school from 2 till 5 or 2 till 6 in the same building. So they just change the teachers and they change the administration staff. So basically, the kids down here of all ages are basically have nothing to do for half a day, every day, every school day. So what you find is very common down here with NGOs, with nonprofits, is that they provide what's called after-school programs. Now, an after-school program can actually be in the morning because that's when the teenagers are not at school. So these are the locations where we teach, is we present ourselves to an after-school location and ask them if they can put us on the curriculum. So in the case of these kids here, for instance, right, they will go from geography to math to philosophy to Spanish. So we're on the curriculum. It's just another topic on the curriculum.
As philosophy.
Philosophy, yeah. So it's just one
Okay.
other topic. Yeah, it's quite
Thank you.
interesting.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And then what are the numbers that you're talking about in terms of how many?
Right now there's 84 teenagers that we're teaching. In our sponsorship program, we have about 70 kids that we have provided sponsors for. These are individual like yourself actually, and other individuals in the States. And that's Liz's responsibility to keep tabs on their families. What we do is we provide them with what we call a protein basket, which is our protein foodstuffs that they ordinarily would not be able to purchase. We also help them out with shoes and clothing, and in certain cases, depending on the donor, solar if they need it. So we try to cover both their intellectual or the development of their potential, as well as what we call hard needs. We try to do
Thank you.
both.
Okay. And then Jeff is asking, what is it about meditation that the kids like?
Well, the first thing they say is, I had no idea how busy my mind was. That's the very first thing that they say. Because it's the first time that they've ever been asked to sit and look at the content of their own experience with their eyes closed. And after a while, what they begin to tell us is that because they're able to separate the self or the seer of the mind stream and the content of that mind stream, they actually realize that it, meaning the mind stream, can actually not affect them as much as it used to do. And this is in the area of cognition and also emotionally. So they actually reap quite a benefit from it in that they can they at least glimpse that it's possible to separate themselves from the torture of their own mind for a short time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then, if anybody else is on the line that would like to unmute their line, all you need to do is hit star six, and then you'll be able to ask Nick a question at this time. In the meantime, Nick, I wanted to ask you, so it sounds to me like it might be that you were implying that the environment that these kids are in may be physically or sexually or emotionally abusive.
Yes.
And then it doesn't sound like there's a lot that you can do about it.
Well, I think with the current generation, meaning the generation that are at their parents' age, there's really not much you can do about it. This is a very religious country. You'll find mostly Catholic, evangelical, and a lot of Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses. So the responsibility for the future has, it's been squarely handed off to, the power figure of the mythic God. And it produces quite a stability in the country, and also beautiful traditions with the Holy Week and the processions and everything. It's absolutely gorgeous. But the younger generation are different. They have a slightly wider view. So we tried for a short time to work with parents, with especially with the moms, but we realized we weren't really getting anywhere because they were too embedded in that particular mythic perspective. So that's when we turned our attention to the younger generation. And as I said, they're absolutely aware of the modern world and of the potentials that are available to them. They're also very aware of the problems that Guatemala has and how, it's virtually impossible for them to get out of this country. It's very, very difficult to even get a holiday visa to go to the States or to go anywhere. So they realize that if they're going to have to stay here, they're going to have to do something about what's the state of their world. So short term, it looks like pretty much of an impossible situation. I think longer term, there's a lot that can be done. And for instance, now you asked that question on with these three kids that are on this slide here. These are the first three kids in our kindergarten back in January of 2011. Their father left them right after Hente, the little guy in the middle there, after he was born. And then the mother left him about 2 weeks before this picture was taken. Now, Luisito, who was six at the time, was taking care of Jimena and Hente at home. They have no shoes, if you notice. They never had shoes. They lived in a adobe cornstalk compound with about 15 adults of various ages. You wouldn't believe the nightmare that was going on. What we did in conjunction with this project where they're standing here, we got in touch with the mayor. We got in touch with the chief of police in the area. We put them with a donor, and we actually built them a small house of their own. We provided somebody to take care of them, actually a deeded property. They're probably the youngest property owners in San Mateo. And of course, in response to that, we said, what can we do with these kids during the day? And this is where the idea for the kindergarten came. So in the morning, the two young ones go to the kindergarten, and that means Luisito can go to school. So in very specific cases, you can actually do a lot. So, three lives saved here. And this little Gente, I mean, he didn't smile for 6 months. He wouldn't come near you. You could not get within arm's reach of this guy. He was like a street dog. This is the little 2-year-old. And now he'll run over and grab your leg and smiling, rolling on the ground like a child should. So it's the idea of the kindergarten program is to give these kids space to be kids and to get them out of the environment. And also what we're doing is we're training them to appreciate what? Cleanliness. They come, the first thing they get is a bath. They get a change of clothes. They get to brush their teeth. They get three meals a day. So they're beginning to appreciate cleanliness and being fed and being safe, which is something that's not in their awareness. So we have to, restructure this in their awareness. And this is part of this kindergarten program with these three little guys here. And here's Gente again, and Jimena, and Kimberly and Pepe having their breakfast and drawing, as kids should do at this age, right?
Right. So it sounds like in some parts it may be heartbreaking, but also rewarding.
I'd say the first year, Veronica, after we moved here, was probably the most difficult year of my life. Because you come home every day and you say to yourself, okay, the story that I heard today or the situation that I saw today, that's the worst. It just can't get any worse than that. Now that happens twice a week for a year, and then you say to yourself, oh my God, this is never going to end. And it takes quite a toll on the motivation to continue to help. But then what happens is after a while you actually get to the end of the stories. And you also get to the end of dealing with that part of yourself that wants to give up, that says there's no point. And of course, in that year you've struggled and built something, and then you walk in and you take a picture like this of Deb with the kids in the kindergarten. If you notice, Hente is like in clean clothes with sneakers, he's looking at the camera, right? His little sister in the red shirt there is smiling. So you have these beautiful moments along the way, and as I said, after a year, you've done some work, and you have done some work subjectively also to bring yourself through this.
Wow.
There's Ruby. How cute is that little
Wow.
thing?
Oh,
You
wow.
look at her. Yeah, she lives 45 minutes walking from the kindergarten in this particular town. And the village where she lives is called El Astillero, which means the shipyard. We have no idea why somebody named a village a shipyard in the middle of like Guatemalan mountains. But that's the name of the village. And we've been in there once. The reason you have to walk there is because it crosses several valleys, and there's only a track to get there. There's about 80, maybe 60 or 70 people living in there. You get the feeling that you're the first gringo in town. Like you see kids peeking at you through the coffee plants, and they're like, oh my God, look, there's white people. Where do they come from? Because a lot of these kids have never been out. Well, why would you ever leave? So Ruby doesn't get to the kindergarten as often as we like, but we try to incent her mom to to bring him. That's
Wow.
Pepe. Pepe with his teddy
Anybody
bear.
else have any questions? Just hit star six to unmute yourself.
This is so fascinating, and I just wanted to say that it's interesting that you are now giving them a firsthand experience of what a loving partnership with a man between a man and a woman can be. So now these younger students have had an actual experience, so maybe they won't be so readily abused.
Or so readily abusive.
No, so readily abused. In other words, if a young if some of these young kids are they see you teaching, they see Deborah, and they're going, wait a second, it doesn't have to be like my parents or my family. So they now actually have an example that it's now on the map for them, that they don't have to take it, essentially. That doesn't mean it won't be easy, but now they can actually see another option.
Right. As Andrew Cohen said, there's nothing more powerful than a living example. And I think that's what we provide. And not only for these younger kids, Veronica, but also for the teenagers. Like we teach in the class, and I always say this, and I will say this, I'm blessed with the relationship that I have, that we have, Deborah and I. And it's quite obvious in the classes, and even with our teenagers. These are kids who are, they're coming to the age now where they can make choices like, should I quit school and get a job and get married and have a baby? And we do this exercise in class called the potential exercise, and we teach them about values, and we teach them about priorities, and we teach them about how potential loves potential. And that it's potential in us that is seeing potential in them. And that potential can equal having a child, it can equal getting a job, but it can also equal staying in school and doing your damnedest to become that doctor or that lawyer or whatever it is, a teacher that you want to become. So it's not only that, and also the fact that we are here and we live here year round. They see the consistency in our desire to help them, which I think is also very beneficial. That we're, Thursday morning we come, and Wednesday or whatever our schedule is, we're there.
Thank you, Mick. And thank you, Jamie, very much for your comment. I think that having the kids see you and having that environment, and possibly also seeing the young adults coming back into Guatemala, if they get that opportunity that these kids have left and come back with an education, they can use those people as a model as well.
I saw a beautiful thing once, actually. It was a moment that I was privy to, was the inventor of the solar unit. And the very first solar installation that we did was back in 2010 in a slum that's behind the school where we teach. It's about 3,000 people living on this mountain. It takes 45 minutes to walk up to the top because it's real steep, real narrow pads, and they suffer from mudslides and all sorts of tragedies up there. And I remember seeing Tano sitting on the side of the hill with the daughter from the house. And I mean, the place is called Vista Hermosa, which means beautiful view, and it's an absolutely stunning view of the entire Panchoy Valley where we live here. And they were sitting there and they were talking, and you could tell that they had such love for their country. And it was such a beautiful moment to see that. So you're right, it is inspiring that Guatemalans are inspired to stay here. We have two of our staff members are Guatemalans. We have the director of our kindergarten program is Guatemalan, and our teacher is also Guatemalan, both single moms, or sorry, newly divorced moms, which is a new thing down here also. And so it's great for the kids to see their own people being empowered, because most of the times, they see a gringo and the first thing they think is, MTV or, some CSI or something, and that we all live in places like Miami or something like that. We're all wealthy.
Well, I think that's all for the questions at the moment. Do you want to continue
Sure.
with the
Here's
next setting? Thank you.
yeah, we're just more of the kindergarten. So these are the conditions that the kids are living in. These kids are actually kind of lucky because they have concrete homes here with no windows, but that's fine. At least they're not living in tin or stock shacks. This is one of our board members, Linda from Canada, at the kindergarten with Pepe, eternally smiling Pepe. This is the house that we had built for Luisito and Gente. Their grandfather deeded this small plot of land, and this was a collaboration of many, many people to make this happen, and they sleep here now. It has a steel door, real windows, and they're safe. So they go from kindergarten to here and then back to kindergarten in the meantime. And it seems that, you know, we had to do some work with the people in the compound to kind of give us the space. And eventually they kind of forgot about the fact that they used to have the kids to abuse. So it's worked out quite well for them. Something else that we do here is this is an article in a local magazine that the girl here and the lady in the middle who's hugging, this is actually a Guatemalan person because when our book was discovered here in Guatemala and it gave us immediate access to the philosophical crowd in Guatemala City, and of course they're all quite wealthy, and it gave us access to the other half of Guatemala, which is virtually impossible to penetrate if you don't have an inn. And she now sponsors one of the girls, and one of her friends is also on our board of directors down here. So it's part of doing our best to have Guatemalans help their own country. And this is a photograph of some business owners from Antigua. Again, something else that we do is, and this is quite common here, is that business owners are very involved with many of the NGOs providing places for fundraising and also donating stuff, or, you know, as they say here, for transport, for bringing up toys and blankets. This is on Christmas Eve. We dropped off clothes and toys to 90 people in this little village. It was quite a beautiful event. I'm not sure we enjoyed it more than they did. And this is them in their little schoolroom. And as a mark of respect, I don't know if you noticed the little pine needles here on the ground. The floors are concrete in the school, but they put these down like a carpet, and this is a sign of respect that we don't have to walk on the concrete. This kid never had a gift before, as you can tell by the look in his face. He's like, what the hell's in this nice big box? Now we're into the solar program. Any questions on the kindergarten, or should I just keep going?
Well, Nick, I was wondering if you wanted to, I know you had another presentation as well to give.
Yes.
And I just wanted to do a time check. I think it's about maybe 20 to 25 minutes until we need to slow it down.
Okay. So why don't I just do 3 minutes and we'll just skip through the rest of these pictures so people can actually see the photos, or you want to just go to the other presentation? I can do both.
The photos are great if you want to slip through. Yep.
All right, let's just slip through them. So again, here's the panel. It's the size of a magazine. This is the inside of a typical home. Donna Fidelia here. If you notice right here, that's a shotgun by her bed. Before this, they don't have electricity in this town, and they get raided from other villages, unfortunately. So she enjoys the security aspect. The units offer 3 to 5 hours of light. Again, beautiful boy with light in his tin shack. These are actually the spiritual advisors to Rigoberta Menchú, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1992. They came to our home and we gave them a demonstration of the units. These are quite profoundly spiritual minds and experts in the Mayan calendars. This is Tano and Juan, the founders of Quetzal. There's Angelita with her installation. Something else we do, again, this is the mayor of one of the local towns. We invite the mayors to participate as much as we can. It's more of coercing them to help us, and they were quite happy to come that day and provide protection for us. In the sponsorship program, we have the sponsor connect with the sponsor child and send this message. It's called a heart message. And there's another image of a heart message with the twins. This is Liz, our sponsor liaison. She does a lot of Skype. Actually, here's a picture of her Skyping. These kids are Skyping with their sponsor. So it's part of what we're also doing at the foundation is making a heart connection between the kids and the sponsors. This is a group of college kids. There's seven in here that are sponsored to pursue education after high school, because otherwise they'd be on the streets. This is Joanna from Australia, who came to visit her sponsor, John Miguel. There's the view in the background there from Vista Hermosa. And Esley, who's an accountant, he's also sponsored by a couple, Esley with his mom. Again, here's me in the States doing a fundraising talk. This is Ted Sapp from the Integral Group in Boston, of great, great supporters. And then when I'm doing the fundraising talks, the kids are on the other end with Deb, and we will live video Skype in with the kids so we can introduce the kids to their sponsors. That's Annabella and the family. So that's pretty much it. Let me switch over to the path of spiritual activism. Now, this is something recently that came out. As I said, we're very involved with the integral groups and the evolutionary groups in the United States, actually around the world. And there was a risque article was written recently about the need for action in spiritual groups. And in response to that, and I presented this in the States when I was up, it's kind of our view on spiritual activism. So what Plato wrote is, these are the torchbearers of humanity, its poets, seers, and saints, who lead and lift the race out of darkness towards the light. They are lawgivers and the saviors, the light bringers, the way showers, the truth tellers. Without them, humanity would lose its way in the dark. So this is an underlying fundamental to our work down here. We actually begin our philosophy classes. Deborah studied philosophy at the University of Madrid. And we begin with the classics, Plato and Socrates. And actually, just last week, we did a demonstration with the kids of the myth of the cavern from Plato. So, spiritual activism—it's a new term, but it's a pretty ancient concept. And here at the bottom, I have the Buddhist traditions refer to this awareness as right livelihood or mindful living, where your actions not only make a contribution to the world, but also to your own personal spiritual growth. So, as I mentioned earlier, working down here, I mean, Deb and I have a very active meditation practice, and we also have, we do a lot of big mind work between ourselves, and we're very active with teleconferences. So, our own spiritual development is quite ongoing in the area of, interactive conferences and also reading. And there's an interesting distinction here at the bottom here. It says spiritual activism is different from missionary work or action because it's not directed from religious dogma. It comes from a realization of the interconnectedness of all beings and the acknowledgement of one's responsibility to the whole. Now, this is something that I mentioned earlier about the process of the cosmocentric worldview, is that at a certain level of development, you realize your own personal responsibility towards the future of humanity, and you take responsibility for that as one's wisdom expands and one's center can embrace more compassion giving. Once one has become aware of the implications of one's choices, one becomes obligated to assess each choice in regard to its impact on the whole. So it's quite a large perspective. Now, the second paragraph here is from my book, From the Uncommon Path, and it says conscious service. And I define it as a life domain. So, for instance, many people would have a life domain of career or a life domain of art, depending on what they do with their time. But the life domain of conscious service is that of the spiritual finder, in which the evolution of consciousness has stabilized as your primary reason for being. This life domain emerges as a profound expression of your own awakening. It is here that you express your interest in the evolution of consciousness for the sake of humanity. So it's really expanding the subjective awareness to include as big a possible scope as one can. Conscious service reveals itself when you have transcended and included the life domain of spiritual seeking at the personal level of development. Now your reasons for growth and development are no longer personal, but for the sake of others. So you can see it bringing in a very compassionate angle here. This is a screen from well, Ken Wilber, in response to this article that I told you about, the Occupy Integral Post by Terry Patton and Mark Morelli. He said, "I think this is beautiful and most definitely an intrinsic to integral theory itself, a map that urges the territory to be filled in and completed with complexity, diversity, love, care, compassion, beauty, truth, freedom, and fullness, and most definitely social activism for all of those." And Ken has actually acknowledged our work here. Ken Wilber has been writing since the 70s on the topic of human potential, human development, the evolution of consciousness. He's got, I believe, 27 books, or maybe 28, in about 60 languages. And I know a lot of the students of Rama have actually studied some of his work. I've had several great conversations. So spiritual activism is based on compassion. It is action for the benefit of something, not against something. And I'm going to scan through these because the links are on the Rama site so people can go read these later. But opening yourself from the pain of the world, shielding yourself from heartbreak prevents transformation. Let your heart break open and learn to move in the world with a broken heart. When we open ourselves to the pain of the world, we become the medicine that heals. And again, as I was saying, this was part of, you know, what Deb and I had went through at least for a year after we started working down here. This screen is based on the work of both Don Beck, who's recreated Spiral Dynamics, and which looks at the evolution of values and culture, and also Ken Wilber's interpretation of this stage model. And what this is looking at is the title here, What You Value is Seen in How You Spend Your Time. And this is something, this is a very big point in the Uncommon Path, that sometimes we can, what's the word? We can believe something about ourselves that really is not visible in how we act. And it's quite a, let me say, a trick of the ego, the unhealthy ego, the small ego with small e, or the limited sense of self, to have us believe one thing while evidence for that is lacking in our experience and in our work in the world. And here it takes you through the various values. It's quite a beautiful hierarchy. It also allows us to see where we are, because, you know, we always make this point in the class, is that if I want to get somewhere in life, the first thing I have to figure out is where I am. Because if I think I'm in Kansas and I want to go to Canada, then it's pretty clear I need to head north. But what if I think I'm in Kansas, but I'm really in Japan? How do I can never get to Canada, even though my intentions are great. So this is part of this practice for ourselves and also for the kids. Now, remember I was mentioning earlier about one of the apexes. Now, an apex is a perspective that includes two other perspectives, meaning a dualistic perspective and a non-dualistic perspective. And this is from the process called Big Mind, which was created by Genpo Roshi about 10 years back. And Deborah is trained in this work. We do a lot of work with this with the kids and also with some of the staff members down here. And this was one of the apexes that got us through that period where we were let me say, dismayed with the fact that it looked like we couldn't get anything done down here. And it's the apex of cause and meaninglessness. Cause being a very dualistic aspect of the human experience, and meaninglessness being very non-dual. And we worked on this for many months. And it's actually quite a beautiful apex to help one move beyond these kinds of obstacles. Again, getting back to the origin of compassion and wisdom, I say here, the higher you've been, the lower, deeper. No, the higher, deeper you've been, the lower, deeper is your embrace. So looking at Eros, which is the evolutionary drive for ever better levels of wisdom, it should be and is being matched by agape, which is love, which is going back down to pick up the bottom. So the idea here in compassion is not just rescuing all sentient beings from suffering, but it's rescuing them from suffering, bringing them to a higher perspective so that they can actually embrace the evolutionary impulse. So the idea is not getting off the rock, it's figuring out that you were never here in the first place, but then returning, because there are always beings lower who need our help. Looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, this is pretty standard model of basic safety, social esteem, and self-actualization needs. And then what I did with this is I kind of recreated it and asked the question, what is your motivation beyond self-actualization? So this essentially is the evolutionary perspective on Buddha's enlightenment or any of the esoteric aspects of the great teachings. Is once I have centered myself in nirvana or in non-duality, then what? It's not the end of the road, it's actually the beginning. And I will leave it on the last screen here. Any questions on that? I know I went through it pretty fast, but we could probably spend a week. We could spend a week on that, right?
Yeah. Well, there was one slide that for those who are listening but not able to see the slides, for whatever reason, it might be a little bit hard to follow. And that was the one where it talks about control versus learning versus I think if you could maybe speak for just a few more minutes on that, that would be great.
Let me go back. Tell me when I'm on it here. It's the one with the levels, right?
Yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
One.
Yeah, turquoise yellow. Yep.
Got it. Okay. Remember at the beginning of the call, I spoke about how our natural inclination in conditioning is to seek and maintain a healthy egocentric perspective, where the basis of our motivations and values are to do with ourselves. So I do everything in the world for myself. What philosophers have noticed, and again, this is based on there's a French philosopher called Jean Gebser, who looked back over the evolution of humanity and began to see patterns. And he began to see that as cultures evolve, as individuals within cultures evolve, the values of that culture actually change. Now, we can give a very simple example. Well, let's look at red here, which is power, eye control, survival of the fittest, enforcing control through dominance and power, demonstrating passion and energy. Now, this is a very valuable level to acquire and to manifest from within oneself. Of course, we can see pathological manifestations of this in street gangs, because that's survival of the fittest also. But we also see it down on Wall Street. Now, as humanity evolved, you could see the blue meme is the meme that emerged about the time of the organized religion. So we're talking like right after Buddha and into the time of Jesus, where there's a we conform, it's obedience to authority and conformity in rules, discipline, and principles. Now, again, this is a very clear evolution in humanity, and this is actually, these are called memes, or these stages. This is the stage that's quite prevalent here in Guatemala because of the organized religion. Now, when we move up again, because what happens is after I realize that survival of the fittest is not working for me because either it's too pathological and I need an army or a police force to put me, or I need the guilt of God to keep me in place, I also realize that that's not working. Because I remember when, you know, I was studying with Rama and I was raised Catholic, and I remember when I decided, oh my God, I'm a Buddhist. I couldn't reconcile this in my own mind, but what I didn't know is I was just going through a stage. And then moving up into orange, this is something, again, what we see down on Wall Street. This is I achieve success through abundant resources. But again, the pathological side of prosperity is, you know, the naive assumption that we are separate from somehow the environment and that there's an endless source. But again, it's moving the individual to higher levels of development. And we move up into green, which is the relate. Humanity can find purpose through connecting with each other and building community, promotes affiliation and consensus and compromise. This is very common now in the United States and also in Europe. It began back in the late 60s with the counterculture movement, with women's liberation. I mean, this has done beautiful things for the world. Now, what happens after that is that there's a momentous leap from green to yellow, which means I now have the ability, because if you look at green, orange, blue, and red, the major pathology of each one of these is that they're unable to take the perspective of another person who's at a different level. So, for instance, you take a Wall Street banker, put him into a room with a rabbi, in a room with a gang leader, and in a room with, let's say, a new age hippie who lives out in the desert somewhere in Colorado, we're going to have a problem because these guys are going, or gals are going to be unable to relate to any deep level because they just can't understand each other's perspectives because they're all convinced that their perspective is the only perspective and the only right perspective, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have this clash of levels below green. What happens in yellow and turquoise is that, and again, this is as a result of continuing wisdom practices, meditation, big mind, emotional work, intersubjective work, yoga, diet, exercise, you name it, all of those, you begin to be able to take the perspectives of the lower stages. Now, it doesn't mean that they're wrong. It means that they exist, that they have their place, that they're very valuable, that they're necessary sometimes to respond. But it's above green and in yellow and turquoise and beyond that you can begin to take the perspective of these other groups in the world, and it allows you to respond to them from their particular stage, which makes development faster. So again, for more research, Spiral Dynamics, this is based on the author and proponent of this. He's worked in South Africa, he's worked in Palestine and Israel, he's actually been here in Guatemala. His name is Don Beck. It's fascinating work, and it really helps you again place where you are, so that you can plan where you want to go.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we do have a question from on the panel, which is, I lost it. I'm so sorry. Is there any opposition, political or religious opposition to what you're doing by people who don't understand or misunderstand what you're trying to accomplish?
That's a good question. For the most part, no. And here's the reason, the main reason why. Well, there's two reasons. The first is when we present ourselves at an organization and we say something like, how can we help you? They're more than happy to take us in and show us around, tell us what their program is, and then they figure out what we do. And they say, okay, we could probably fit you in here. Even though we're not coming from a blue meme, like this level here, we're not coming, I'm not walking in trying to convert people to be Christians or Mormon or Jehovah. That's not our goal. Even though that they might be at that level. The second thing is they see the benefit that our work is bestowing on the kids. Like we recently got handed two more classes here for the philosophy teenagers, and part of the reason was they notice a shift in the group in relationship to other teachers in the school, their obedience, their attendance. So there's actually a spillover from what we do into the rest of the school. So they notice that and they admire that. The second main reason is that when there's an issue in the school, let's say there was one situation where one of the schools you work with almost had to close because a lot of these teenagers, remember, are in gangs. These are gang neighborhoods. These are what's called red districts. A red district, which means you cannot go after dark. You got to stay out because they're just too dangerous for gringos. So you have this element in the schools, and one of the schools is going to close down for a week to try and solve the issue that we're just losing control. They brought asked Deborah to come in and do an assessment, and she did and did a lot of work with the kids and the teachers at the same time, believe it or not, and resolved that issue. They didn't have to close. And also some of the directors of these schools and staff members know about the work we do. And when they have, because here in Guatemala there's no such thing as compassion fatigue training. Like you're given a tiny salary and you're thrown into a slum as a teacher or as a psychologist, and they say to you, go to work. They don't do anything to try and save your life. So compassion fatigue is one step down from It's like post-traumatic stress disorder, except it happens over a period of 5 years. So inevitably, a lot of these people will crash, or they're unable to deal with their own personal life and what they're seeing at work every day. And this is another area in which we do a little bit of work, not too much, but we do work there. So when we're, giving the talk that Jeff Guerra gave about the Big Bang and how the Big Bang, happened 14 billion years ago, which is a long time before Jesus showed up, there was really little or no resistance to that. They're actually curiously intrigued, but because of the benefit they see from the work, they're quite happy to allow us our space. As far as the government really doesn't know what the government's doing, so they're really, you don't have to really worry about them. They're too busy, trying to figure out their own nest.
Wow. Well, thank you. We are at my time, 6:18, and I want to just open it up for any more questions. To ask a question, unmute your line by hitting star 6 or typing a question into the chat box.
Nick, I was curious why the number 84. I mean, mainly because I'm putting a program together right now, and 84 popped into my mind, and I was thinking the 84 siddhas. Was that just the number of children that applied, or did you actually pick that number?
That's the number of kids who just happen to be in the class. Is it purely
Naturally
coincidence? I guess it is.
occurring. Okay, very interesting. Thank you. Thank you for your question. That's a good question.
You're welcome.
Okay, good. So, what I'd like to just say, number one, thank you very much, Mick. This is fascinating. Just really a joy to listen to and inspiring, very inspiring to what you're doing. Just once again, for people, if they want to make donations, the website is www.integral, INT. Oh boy.
Let me, you know
Hold
what,
on a second.
Veronica, let me give you a short URL for that. It'll
Thank you.
it's easier than that one. It's
Yeah.
self.org, like with a C. So CELF.org. That's the
Oh,
short
great.
URL.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Integral Heart Foundation is quite a mouthful. And if they notice there on the top of the page, there's a little link that says ways of giving, and we have like every possible way you can think of. So we're most interested in actually finding sponsors who will who we can connect with individual kids down here who will sponsor them through their education. That's one of the programs that we that we're, right now we have 105 child sponsors as of this month. And also the solar units that they're cost about $235 will provide light for a family for many, many years. And save them an absolute fortune in candles. So those are a one-time donation too, if anyone's interested.
Great, thank you. And that's CELF, C like cat or Charlie. And thank you so much. And so also just wanted to mention that next week we will not be holding a session. The following week we have Gail, and Gail is going to be speaking on athleticism and the American athletics at the American Buddhist Way, thank you, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So that would be 4 p.m. Pacific Time. So that will be on the 15th of July. And then I do not have anyone booked after that. So I have a couple things lined up, but we are also going to be reawakening the career workshops. Looks like we'll have 4 sessions on database design development and what's going on with advanced technology there. So likely we'll be taking a little break from the Teacher American Buddhism workshops. And just in case anybody else has any questions, in a few minutes we'll be starting our 1 minute of silence and gratitude for the teacher, the teachings, and the Sangha. But before that, I'd like to see if there's anybody else has any questions in the audience.
Well, I just wanted to say this was so fascinating, and while you have no other speakers, this is a topic that I could think if if Mick was interested, could even be expanded on, because I know we had to cut him short. And on that note, some of the speakers you had last year, who are also around the world, it seems, it would be interesting to find out a year later what new insights they have. So that was just a couple of ideas that I had as far as future speakers. And,
great. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you so much. And then after we do our 1 minute of silence, then we'll go off, both off mute and off recording. So if there's any questions, anybody in the audience has questions for Mick, but they don't want to be on recording, then please do stay on the line and we can get your questions there as well.
Perfect. And just to respond to that question there, I would certainly be happy to expand on certain areas. So just keep that in mind, Veronica, for the future.
Thank you. Well, I'd love to hear a book. I'd love to see a book on what you've learned just by going to Guatemala when you were talking about going through that year, not so much the dark night of the soul, but the dark night of activism, or the dark night of volunteering, as well as the story of that gentleman who gave you all the stories about the volcano.
Things
going. So you got two books. I want to see two books from you.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you for the assignment.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But who knows, you know, it might bring more money into the community. So that's fun. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mick. And any comments before we start our 1 minute of silence? From you, Mick?
Oh, from me. Sorry. I thought you were looking, you were speaking to the audience. No, I just want to say, you know, thanks again for having me on. And it's really great to speak of the work. It's quite empowering to know that, you know, there are so many folks around the world who are interested. It keeps us going that there's an audience for this type of work here. So thank you all.
Absolutely. Sounds like you're on the front lines. Okay. All right, so we'll do 60 seconds on the gratitude for the teacher, the teachings, and the sangha, and then I'll come back online and turn everybody off, turn the recording off and turn everybody off mute, so if you want to say goodbye or thanks to Mick. Okay, and I'll see you in 60 seconds. Thank you all.
Thank you.